This is Sound Health Radio on BBS Radio. I am your host, Sherry Edwards. Thanks for joining us. Today we're going to be talking to an expert about raising happy and confident kids. We're a little late in starting. We couldn't get in touch with Dr. Jen the way we wanted to. But there are millions of households out there that are having issues with child rearing, and we'll be taking your questions. Our guest today, Dr. Jen Berman, is an expert in raising happy, confident kids and has written a book by the same name. We're going to be talking to Dr. Jen, as she likes to be called, just in a few minutes, but we have some announcements, about six it looks like. One, we have an ongoing vocal profiling project going on that deals with relationships. If any of you are interested in looking at compatibilities or non-compatibilities of issues and the people in your life, then please get in touch with us at so if you would please get in touch with us at heather@vocalprofiling.com. Second announcement, Lynn Taggart, author of The Field, will be on the show later this month, and she's going to invite all of our BBS listeners to join her in a special experiment. We'll be talking about more about that later. John Perkins, author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman, How Business and Government is Really Run and It Has Nothing to Do with Benefits to the Consumer. A fascinating book. I've started to read that about what's really going on economically. We've added, number four, we've added more demo classes to accommodate all of you who want to join us. Please get in touch with Nikki, N-I-C-K-I, at vocalprofiling.com here at the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology, or you could always use Heather's address. Most of you already know that and write most of your information and requests to her. Number five, I hope all of you have noticed that there's now a Ron Paul show on BBS Radio. As a matter of fact, it's on every day now. Steve Benson is the host, and it's on at 3:30 Pacific time. Last one, in answer to Shelley's question about vaccination risk factors and the computer program that we talked about, the particular biflavonoid we were talking about is quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. And that's found in citrus fruits, apples, onions, red grapes, broccoli, I think, green leafy vegetables, things like that. I think that's all of our announcements. We are going to be going till 5 minutes to the hour with our guest. There's no commercials. And our guest today is Dr. Jen Berman, a successful therapist, a parenting expert on television and radio, an award-winning columnist, and a parent, parent being the most appropriate word there. She's written a book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, a Resource for Parents. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jen.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Your book sounds exciting. I love your website. I love the music.
Thank you.
You sound like a very supportive, nurturing person.
Well, thank you. I do my best, and I really feel like it's part of my job to do exactly that so that people can be really honest and can feel free to ask me the questions that they need to ask.
Tell us about this book. Is this your first book?
This is my first book. And I've been writing a parenting column for about 5 years. It's won some awards in parenting and child development. And I've been working as a marriage, family, and child therapist. I've been working in the field for over 15 years now. And I also have traveled the country as a parenting and psychological expert. And I really try to look at what are the questions that come up over and over again in my practice, when I travel, when I write my column and people write to me, what are the issues that parents really need to know about? And I narrowed it down to 26 issues, one for each letter of the alphabet, and each chapter stands on its own. And each chapter is filled with research to back up what I'm saying wherever it was available, but it's written in a way for regular lay people to read. I really tried to make it fun and entertaining and also to share vignettes from my experience as a practitioner, and also to have sidebars that give parents very specific tips. Because I know as a parent there have been times when I've read books where I've said, okay, well, that's a nice theory, but how does that apply to my kids? So I really want to answer all those questions in this book, and I hope that I have.
Yeah, I didn't get to read your book from A to Z, but it's certainly chock full of wonderful information. You'll find our audience here at BBS to be very practical, mm-hmm. yet a very willing audience. We will be taking questions. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely. And I think that this book will really appeal to that audience because the book is very practical, and I really want it to be a book that busy parents don't have to read cover to cover to get something out of it. It's the kind of book that hopefully you'll have by your bedstand as a parent, and you'll look at a chapter and say, oh, you know, B is for boogeyman, childhood fears. Oh, that's something that's really coming up right now. Why is my child having nightmares? I'm gonna read that chapter, and then you can put it down and then say, oh, you know, later on my kids are having trouble sleeping, and then look at that chapter, or self-esteem issues, or whatever the issues are that are coming up.
Well, our toll-free number in the U.S. is 877-876-5227, and toll-free in Canada, 888-815-9756. Direct line 530-876-3222. And if you didn't catch those numbers, you can go to bbsradio.com, and those numbers are on the front. We will also be taking email requests and questions. That's something our audience really likes to do. And the address is radio@vocalprofiling.com or soundhealth@soundhealth.org. And already emails are starting to come in.
Oh, great.
In your book, while those are coming in, we will. I want to ask you some questions about things that I found.
Sure.
You talked about this book is for early childhood. What ages is this book for?
It's really geared towards parents who have children, I would say, from about 4 until 10. But I always feel like it is never too early to start reading about this stuff. I've had a lot of people give this as a gift for baby showers. So a lot of parents the first 3 years are enjoying it as well, and I've got a lot of great feedback from those parents who really want to start laying the foundation to really figure out what their parenting philosophy is and to collect the information. For example, I have a chapter about media and television and why you shouldn't let your kids watch television in the first 2 years, and then how it's important to limit it from there on. So a lot of the chapters do address even earlier than early childhood, those first 3-4 years, but it was originally written geared towards early childhood.
You talk a lot in your book about validating a child's feelings, and that information I think is incredibly important. I'm a parent, a grandparent, and a great-grandparent.
Wow. That's amazing.
I think what you talk about in validating a child's feelings, if you could talk about that, that would be great.
Sure.
Then we want to talk about the other side of that.
I think that validating a child's feelings, it's really, in my chapter about self-esteem and the A to Z guide to raising happy, confident kids, I talk a lot about how important it is that parents really listen to their children's feelings and that we want our children to feel heard. And a lot of the time, parents get scared by negative emotions like anger. And sometimes kids will say things in anger, for example, you know, I hate you, or you know, I hate my teacher, or I wish I didn't have a brother, or things like that. And a lot of the time, parents, their knee-jerk reaction is often to say something like, you don't really mean that, or you don't really feel that way. And it's important for parents, instead of trying to change feelings that their kids are uncomfortable with, instead to reflect back to them to say, it sounds like you're really angry, it sounds like you're really mad at me, or it sounds like you're really mad at your brother. That way you can get to the bottom of it, because nobody, even kids or adults, we can't help how we feel. We can always help our behaviors, but to make a child feel guilty about feeling something or confused about feeling something doesn't make the feeling go away. It only makes them more upset and more confused and more likely to act out. And kids who have really great self-esteem tend to be the kids who really feel heard and understood by their parents. And really hearing and understanding our children means listening to their feelings, validating their feelings, even when they're feelings that are uncomfortable and that as parents we don't necessarily like. And it's also not projecting, not making assumptions about our kids, not saying, oh, you know, when I was Johnny's age, I liked baseball, I bet Johnny will like baseball, but to really look at who our kids are and get to know them so that we can really respond to them in a way that's fulfilling and that's connected with them.
I know, and sometimes when my kids would do that, particularly the that age of like 5 and 8, when they really hear that, I would just say, well, how do you think you ought to treat somebody you hate? And then that would open up a whole dialogue.
Sure.
About how to deal with it.
Sure. Okay. And those are great dialogues to have. And also, you know, it sounds like you are a very aware person, and your kids, grandkids, and great-grandkids are very lucky to have that. You know, most parents didn't have that experience growing up, so it's very hard to know how to give it as a parent.
It's something my grandma used to do with me. She played a game called Sposing. Now,
yes.
Sposing, I say this, how would that person feel?
Sure. And that actually teaches what we call EQ, emotional intelligence, because what we want is for children to start to early on to understand what the consequences of their actions are. And really, really young children can't. Your 2-year-old can't understand if I say that, this is what that person feels. That's very complex thinking developmentally for a child that young. But absolutely, your 6, 7, 8-year-old can start to understand that, and if they're able to get that, it will give them an advantage in life, because if you're able to anticipate how people will feel when you do things, you're more likely to be able to make friends, you're more likely to be able to keep friends, do well at the office. It's a great skill to teach kids.
Well, let's go to the other side of that. How do you unvalidate bad behavior? I don't know if that's a good way to put it, but... How do you unvalidate bad behavior?
Well, to unvalidate bad behavior or feelings? I'm not totally clear what your question is.
Oh, that's a good way to drop it back on me. We talked about validating a child's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep them from doing or having bad feelings? Well, I'll just use...
Well, you can't. And that's the reason why it's so important to reflect those feelings. You can't keep your child from having bad feelings. You can't keep anyone from having bad feelings. And the truth is, you wouldn't really want to, because it's important. What's more important is that adults teach children how to deal with bad feelings, teach them how to accept them and work with them, because we all have bad feelings. We all, especially as adults, we have moments of jealousy, we have moments of anger, we have moments of disappointment and sadness. And if we can teach our children how to deal with those feelings early on, they will be set as adults.
So we should say that, I mean, it's okay to hate me for the moment we can talk about it.
Absolutely. It's okay that you hate me. It sounds like you're really angry at me. What's going on that you're so angry at me? That is more helpful to your child than, you don't really hate me. Cut that out. Or it's not okay to tell mommy that you hate her. You know what? Sometimes kids hate their mommy. You know, sometimes that happens because they're frustrated, they're angry. The truth is, as adults, we know that they can hate us and love us at the same time. And usually we don't hate people that we don't have a connected feeling towards, because we wouldn't care that much. So it's okay for children to be angry. It's okay for them even to hate us. It's also okay for us to say, it really hurt my feelings when you said that.
That's a very good approach. There's a question here about, I don't want to say negative feelings, but feelings that we want to protect our kids about. And the question is, at what age should a child be excluded or included from a funeral? What should they be told about death?
That's a great question. I actually did a lecture about this. And, you know, so much of it also depends on your child's maturity level, their relationship with the person who died, what you feel that they can handle, and their curiosity. You know, it's I would say from about 5 on, it's okay, 5, 6, depending on the child's development and maturity, to bring them to a funeral. But I would never bring a child to a funeral that does not want to go. I also wouldn't bring a child to an open casket funeral, because that's different. Seeing a dead body in front of you, especially if someone that you know, can be very traumatic. But if it is a closed casket funeral and your child had a connected relationship with that person and wants to go, definitely. If even if your child is a little younger but they request to go, I would definitely say let them go. But also you're going to have to do a lot of explaining and also help them understand death.
I think TV gives us and cartoons gives us a really distorted idea of death and injury.
It's a great point, and that's an important thing for parents to address. To say, you know how in that cartoon when you saw the buddy get hit over the head and it looked like it died and then it got up and was okay, that's not what happened to Grandma. Grandma actually isn't coming back, and it's very sad. And, you know, a lot of parents, when it comes to death, want to protect their children and not let their child see them grieve. But it's actually important for children to see their parents grieve the loss of someone that they care about, because that's how kids learn. And if a parent acts like everything is fine when it's not, kids get confused. And they're more likely to act out and to have nightmares because there's a sense in the family that there's not an open discussion. And when kids can ask their parents questions, when they feel comfortable and know that they will be answered, that they won't be shamed or berated or even teased, they're more likely to ask questions and will be able to resolve issues that come up a lot faster.
Here's another TV question.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorites. I have a whole chapter in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids about TV.
My husband watches a lot of sports. Sometimes he records shows and watches them over and over. My 12-year-old son is falling into the same habit. I don't want this to happen, but my son seems to enjoy the time with his dad. Is there a right answer? I'm talking 5 and 6 hours a day of TV and on the weekends more.
It's a great question, and it's way too much TV for a child to watch. Truthfully, it's way too much TV for an adult to watch, but she probably can't control her husband. But what I would recommend doing for her 12-year-old is to create a TV allowance and to say, you are allowed to watch it, and you might, since this is a child who's now watching, it sounds like about 40 hours of TV a week, I would want to get him down to a maximum of 2 hours a day. So I would say, okay, you can watch, let's start off with 3 hours a day, and you get to pick those shows that you watch, obviously within parental controls, nothing inappropriate. Do you want to spend that watching the same show over and over 3 times, or would you rather save those hours to watch with your dad? How would you like to use those hours? Let's make a plan. So it's really important that child actually start to make choices, because clearly there's no monitoring going on, and it's important that a child learn to actually make choices and to choose, when I watch this show, it means I won't have the time to watch that show. And a few things for her to know, and this might help her explain to her husband why she's making these choices. First of all, when a child watches television, oftentimes you see that glazed look on their face. Well, studies have shown that watching television while a child is watching, their metabolic rate slows down by 12%. For obese children, it slows down by 16%. So while her child is watching TV, the child's chance of being overweight go up. In addition, obviously when they're watching TV, they're not being active, they're not being creative, they're not learning pretty much anything, especially if they're just watching the same show over and over again. And in addition to that, when children eat in front of the TV, and I'm assuming if her child's watching 40 hours a week of TV, then the odds are her child's eating in front of the TV as well. Studies show that when you eat in front of the television, we eat 8 times more food than when we're not watching television, because we tune out our body's cues. So all this TV watching is putting her child at risk for obesity, and also, in addition to that, is her child's health is going to suffer from not being active 40 hours a week of just sitting in front of the TV. That's a lot of time wasted where that child isn't connecting with other kids, isn't being social, isn't exercising, and isn't moving.
When you put it in those terms of 40 hours a week,
that's a full-time job.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And when you think about all the wonderful things in life that are passing this child by, it's really sad. You know, that's a child who, for 40 hours a week, isn't going out and playing with his friends, isn't doing artwork, isn't being creative, isn't writing a story, isn't going out and just rolling around in the grass.
sounds like there's a relationship issue here, too.
Yes.
Because you're going to have to talk to the kid about it's okay for dad to watch TV, but it's not okay for you.
Well, I think you don't say it's okay for dad to watch TV. What you do is you say, dad has made this choice. Mommy doesn't think it's the healthiest choice for dad, but dad's a grown-up. And when you're a grown-up, you can watch as much TV as you want when you don't live in our house. But for now, part of my job as your mom is to make sure that you're healthy. And I know that this is fun time with your dad, and you may want to save your TV hours to watch with your dad, but I want to have a healthy son, and I want to be a healthy mom. So instead, let's go out and play baseball, or let's go and you know, do whatever. But this is a child who's looking to his parents to model behavior, and unfortunately, dad isn't doing it. So mom is going to need to step up and be more active. And in my book, I also talk about I have a whole chapter in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids about teaching your kids to love exercise. And one of the things I talk about is having things in the house that your child can do and use to keep active. For example, hula hoops. You know, if you have enough room for a hula hoop for a kid to stand in your living room and do a hula hoop, it's a great way for a kid to be active that doesn't, you know, you don't have to have a huge backyard to do. And there are a lot of activities that kids can do, even in the house, Twister. Simple things that you can keep in the house that will encourage your child to be active. You know, when parents turn off the TV, and it's a tough step for most parents to take, but when you turn off the TV, you're challenging your child to actually be creative in their life and to find new activities to do. And in the beginning, it's going to be nothing but complaining and, Mom, you're unfair and I hate you and this sucks and I can't believe you're doing this. And then ultimately, you're going to end up with kids who are more creative, more active, and really are going to do better in life.
I can see the mom's dilemma, though, when I reread this. My son seems to enjoy the time with his dad.
And that's key. And like I said earlier, it seems like this is an important part of his relationship with his dad. He doesn't have to do it 40 hours a week to be close to his dad, but he may want to use that TV allowance, that 2 hours ultimately, that will start with 3 hours, but that 2 hours a day or 14 hours a week to spend watching TV with his dad.
There's another email that's come in. It's quite lengthy. I'm going to just sort of pick out the pieces here.
Okay.
When I tell my children it's time to clean their rooms or it's time to go to bed, my husband often countermands my directive, saying things like, I'll help you with your room later, or can't she stay up a bit longer? I'll see that she gets to bed. He never does, and the room stays a clutter, and both she and her father fall asleep on the couch. I've tried to talk to him, and he says he was raised this way, and he's okay. I think this kind of tug-of-war is unhealthy. He only does this when he's mad at me.
Sounds like he's passive-aggressive.
I am at my wit's end. He won't go to counseling. I'm constantly being put in the position of being the mean parent that makes people mind. We have made a plan about bedtimes and such, but he never sticks to it. Please help me. Maybe this isn't a kid's problem, but it sure is causing problems at my house.
Well, it's both. She's absolutely right. The good news from what you read in this email is that he only does this when he's angry at his wife. That it sounds like when he's not angry at her, even though he was raised differently, he'll let his daughter go to bed at a decent hour. One of the things I talk about in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids is the importance of structure for a child. And even though he was raised in a home that clearly had no structure, and yes, he's okay. Well, he's okay not because of that. He's okay despite that, that he was able to thrive even without that structure. A lot of kids can't. And kids tend to do best, even though they may complain about it, when they have consistency and they have structure. Not to mention, in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, I have a whole chapter all about sleep. And I talk about the importance of a consistent bedtime, a consistent wind-down ritual. And what her husband is teaching her daughter is the rules don't apply to you. Mommy is not important. It's okay to ignore mommy. And not to mention that you can do whatever you want in this house, and you can manipulate us by dividing and conquering. What I would recommend for this woman is to sit down with her husband when her daughter is not home, when it is not a tense moment, when it's a more relaxed moment, to say to him, look, I know that there are times when you are upset with me, and we need to work on that and to talk about that, but we need to figure out what's best for our daughter and how we can put our daughter first and not let our conflicts in our relationship affect our daughter. Because ultimately what it comes down to is that this daughter needs structure and she needs parents who she can count on, and her husband is taking out his conflicts with her and being passive-aggressive.
We talked about passive-aggressive behavior a bit in adult relationships, but it sounds like this guy is really using a child to further that.
Yes, he is. He is. And the child is a pawn for him in getting back at his wife. And what he doesn't realize because of the environment he grew up in is that he's hurting his daughter more than he's hurting his wife, even though he's hurting his wife a lot, clearly. And what his daughter learns is, the rules don't apply to me, mommy's not important. Well, who do we know who thinks the rules didn't apply to her? Well, perhaps Paris Hilton, perhaps Lindsay Lohan. You know, that's how we get into trouble in this world. If you think the laws don't apply to you, the rules don't apply to you, you're more likely to break them. And as much as a father may say, oh, well, you know what, it's just bedtime, it isn't just bedtime. This is how our children learn about how the world operates. And if the rules don't apply to them at home, why would the rules apply to them outside the home?
I think what this guy is saying, and you're the therapist, I don't have any therapy training, but just from the feel of this, he's saying the mother isn't important, the child isn't important, only what I want is important.
Mm-hmm. And I suspect that there is a lot of anger in this relationship, that the husband is angry at the wife, and perhaps he feels dismissed in other ways or feels powerless in other ways in other areas, and this is an area where he feels that he can get some power. I mean, I would really wonder where in this relationship he feels so powerless that he has to use the child like this to exert power.
It doesn't feel like an adult response. It feels very much like a manipulative or authoritative response.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's very manipulative, and it really is overlooking his role as a parent. It's neglecting his role as a father because it's not fun. And it's so important that parents put their kids' well-being and welfare before what's fun for them. You know, it's fun to go to Disneyland and eat nothing but ice cream all day long and go to sleep at midnight and you know, wake up whenever we want, but kids aren't going to thrive that way. They're going to be tired and grouchy, and that's not the way kids thrive.
Boy, there are a lot of heart-wrenching emails that are coming in here. And some of them are very long, and I'm having trouble just getting the meat out of them. If you guys could
Sure. Ease
up a bit, you know, give me a few words or something. But here's one. Mm-hmm. My child was a very wonderful and cooperative kid until I had his second round of vaccinations. His verbal skills have backslid. He's uncooperative. He's become a finicky eater. I don't know what to do. I will buy your book in a second. If you have any suggestions for taking care of this kind of issue, I wish I had never had him vaccinated. Since I did, I've heard the same story from many parents.
Does it say how old her child is or which vaccinations they were?
It doesn't, but the second round usually is about 3 months or so. I don't know.
Yeah, because what surprises me about that email is that the second round is around 6 months. 5-6 months.
So this is probably something older, but from the feel of
it. But it sounds like she's describing an older child because she says cooperative, and usually a 5-month-old isn't cooperative.
They get their MMRs at about 18 months or so.
Usually the first round of MMR starts at 1, and MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella, is a very controversial vaccine. And I'm a psychotherapist. I'm not an MD, so I don't want to give any expertise as an MD, but what I can tell you as a parenting expert is that the MMR is a very controversial vaccination, and that while the medical community and the American Academy of Pediatrics says there really aren't any problems with the MMR, there are some people who believe that there is a relationship between the MMR and autism, and a lot of parents have reported seeing changes in their children after having that vaccination, And a lot of experts recommend that either skipping that vaccination, which many pediatricians are against, and it's important to do what's right for your family, or separating out the M, and the R, that you can get it separately, that some people feel that if your child is vulnerable to autism, that sometimes this can be the trigger that puts them over the edge. And this is a somewhat non-traditional view of it, but that's what some doctors, Eastern medicine doctors, and even some doctors who aren't big fans of the vaccinations believe. But what I would recommend for this woman is to take her child to another doctor and to get some second opinions. That if there is a dramatic change in your child, you always want to get a second opinion. Clearly, this doctor that she's seeing is someone who is pro-vaccination. It sounds like she's not being heard by the doctor, that the doctor hasn't acknowledged that there's anything wrong. And when we pay for vaccinations, a percentage of the money that we pay for vaccinations goes towards a fund for children who are maimed or killed by vaccinations. And there's a list of requirements that children have to meet in order to get paid out from this fund. And I do think it would be a good idea for her to see if she can find this information, and she can feel free to go to my website, drjen.com, drjen.com. And if she goes to, if she emails me, which you can get my email through the website, I'd be happy to help her find that information if she isn't able to find it. But it sounds like she is noticing a significant change in her child that needs to be checked out by other doctors as well so that she can get some expertise.
We just did a research study on vaccination risk factors. We do vocal profiling here at the Institute, and that was one of the announcements that we did in the beginning, that one of the things that we found that really helps these babies before and after is the biflavonoid quercetin. Mm-hmm. And that's some of Eva Sneed. She's a Venezuelan MD, and that's some information that she has done, come out with some of her research.
And she suggests taking that before taking vaccinations?
Yeah, if you're being forced, and a lot of school districts do try to enforce that now.
Mm-hmm.
They're enforcing the papilloma now, and they've just come out, we saw in the paper, papilloma for the male, just in case. I think some of this is getting out of hand.
Yes, I would agree with you, and I think that it's very scary when the government or our school system is telling us what we have to put in our children's bodies.
Here is a very, well, there's a couple here that are really sad. And I don't remember seeing anything like this in your book. I suspect that my husband is abusing my daughter from a previous marriage. I see him looking at her in ways that I find very uncomfortable. I've talked to him about the subject, but not directly about what I suspect, but he just seems oblivious. Is there a way to bring this up without causing a major breakdown in my family? I don't want this to be happening.
Your number one job is to protect your daughter, and you need to listen to your instincts. And even if he hasn't acted on what you're picking up on, even if he hasn't actually made advances at your daughter or actually molested her, clearly you're picking up on some incestuous vibe that's in the house, whether it's he's fantasizing about it or he's just looking at her in a way that's inappropriate. And that's enough, in my book, to have a very direct conversation with him. I think that she's so afraid of getting him upset that she's not protecting her daughter, and she needs to let him know that she is seeing him look at her daughter in a way that's making her uncomfortable and that it's got to stop. And truthfully, I would be suspicious of something that might have happened. I would want to sit down and have a conversation with the daughter to say, hey, you know, is there anything that's going on in this house that makes you uncomfortable? Is there anything that you would like to tell me about? Know that you can tell me anything and that I will never blame you and that I will always be there for you to support you, because you want to make sure that that your daughter has the room to tell you and that that she has the trust and the safety with you so that she can speak to you.
She goes on saying that her daughter's behavior has really changed and she's become withdrawn, and I think
something's going on.
For her to even write to a show like this.
Yeah. I mean, I really believe in listening to your instincts, and I think that the most important thing is protecting your child. You know, this may sound, I don't want to sound flip, but you can always find another husband. It's your job to protect your child. It's so important that you are there for her, and I really believe in trusting your instincts. And if you are picking up on something that makes you uncomfortable, then something is going on.
And if he's really supportive of the family, he's going to understand.
Exactly. Exactly. If he is really a good man, then his response isn't going to be defensive. His response is going to be, oh, my God, that must be so horrible for you that you thought something like that was going on. Tell me what I'm doing that's making you uncomfortable. I want to stop immediately. I would never want to make you or her uncomfortable. But the fact is that she's noticing different behavior in her daughter. Something is wrong, and she's picking up on it.
Let's do an easy one because we got three more hard ones coming up.
Okay.
What's your suggestion for guidelines for a cell phone? What use restrictions?
This is such a tough issue, and it also depends on the age of your child. But I believe in when you first give your child a cell phone, they have cell phones now where you can only dial, I think it's three numbers that are pre-programmed, and it's usually like mom, dad, grandma, or like mom, dad, and 911. There's really no reason for a child to have a cell phone because they're at school. You'll pick them up. The only reason why they could possibly need a cell phone is you haven't shown up to pick them up, and they are nervous. But the truth is, there's always a payphone, and plenty of other kids have cell phones. I really believe in holding off until they're old enough to pay their cell phone bill themselves.
But like 16 when they get a job.
Yeah, you know, or even with their allowance. You know, sometimes a 14, 15-year-old has saved up money and they can pay their phone bill, but also with the understanding you don't pay your phone bill, you lose your phone. You know, if you are old enough to have a cell phone, you're old enough to pay the bill.
There was a question here about allowances.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, allowances. Boy, this is quick and short. Allowance, when start, question mark, how much, question mark, chores, question mark.
In the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, I have a whole chapter all about this issue. It's called, it's a Q chapter, Q is for quarters, teaching your kids about money. And I really believe in the importance of starting these lessons as early as possible. As soon as your child is old enough to do basic addition and subtraction, that's when you want to start to do an allowance. And there are two schools of thought. One school of thought says, allowance should always be linked to chores, that you want your child to learn early on that you work for pay, and if you want to earn money, then you need to work to get it. The other school of thought is that your child should just get a weekly allowance. Well, there are pros and cons to both. If you give your child chores and expect them to be paid, the caveat, the thing that you want to avoid is you don't want to have a mercenary child where you say, oh, it's time to take out the garbage. We need you to take out the garbage. And they say, okay, well, that will be $5, Mom. You want to have a child who participates in the family and doesn't have to get paid to do that. So that part I leave up to individual families to figure out what works for you. As far as the amount, often what is recommended is the age of the child per week. So your 5-year-old could get $5 per week. But here's the thing, because that's a lot of money, especially for a 5-year-old. That allowance has to go to pay for specific things. If your child is getting $20 a month, they're not going to learn anything. But if you say to your child, great, you can have an allowance, but any toys that you want aside from the gifts that you get on your birthday and the holidays, you will now be paying for. When we're at the supermarket and we get to the end of the line and you say, I want some candy, that will come from your allowance from now on. Also, a lot of parents talk about teaching their children to be charitable. If you teach your child, okay, well, we believe in tithing. We want 10% to go towards the church. Or I want for you to put a percentage of this towards a charity. Well, a child doesn't learn anything except how to follow instructions when a parent says, you have to take this money and give it to this charity. But they do learn when you say, well, here are some suggestions. Here's the money that you earned. Well, some people like to save money because, you know, there might be a big ticket item that you want to save up for. You know, I know you really want that Barbie camper. And, you know, if you want it, you're going to have to pay for it yourself, so you may want to save for it. Or you can have some money that is available to you now. And you also have the opportunity to possibly give money to a charity. You might be able to help some dogs who need homes. You might be able to help some orphans build a new home, that kind of thing. that teaches children. Also, there are always opportunities on, pretty much on a day-to-day basis to teach our kids about money. When we go into the toy store with our kid, if our child doesn't yet have an allowance and we have, let's say, $25 to spend on a toy, if you say to your child, we have $25 to spend, how do you want to spend it? You get to decide how it's divided. As long as it's a toy I approve of or toys, you get to pick how it's spent. Well, that child then learns, I can buy a $10 toy and a $15 toy. I can buy one $25 toy. Or if they pick a $30 toy, you can then say, great, now we can save up $5 and we can come back after you saved up the $5 and we can get that toy. You've just taught your child delayed gratification. You've taught them the value of a dollar. You've taught them fantastic lessons that will benefit them throughout their entire lives.
Well, here's a grandma tip. When I used to take my grandkids to the store, and I love buying them things and seeing their face light up, but they would just $5 me to death, and would be spending $20-$30. So now I give them their shopping allowance before we go, and they don't spend nearly as much money.
Of course they don't. It's really smart. And I do have to say, the rules are different for grandmas. Grandmas get to do some spoiling, but I think that that's a great idea. It's a really terrific tip.
You ready for some harder questions?
Sure.
Okay. How can a parent get the teenagers from talking so hateful to the younger kids? I have a 16-year-old and an 8-year-old. The 16-year-old is constantly putting down the 8-year-old. I try to explain that an 8-year-old doesn't have the same perspective and can't be as aware as a 16-year-old. My explanations fall on deaf ears.
Well, parents have a lot of power. And that power oftentimes comes in money. It comes in freedom. It comes in trinkets. Today's trinkets are the computer, the phone, text messaging, IMing, you know, access to all of those sorts of things. And I would set down some ground rules in advance and to say, if you call your sister a name, if you speak to her in a way that I feel is cruel, unnecessarily hurtful. I mean, it's one thing to have two kids who are arguing, but it's another thing when your 16-year-old is very critical and abusive to your child. Then you say to your 16-year-old, here's a list of things that will be taken away, and we will start at the top. You tell your sister that, you know, she's a, you know, use a bad word anywhere. Okay, then you just lost your cell phone for 2 days. And you can go through the list, and I would be willing to bet that will stop. On a deeper level, I would want to look at why is the 16-year-old so angry at the 8-year-old and what is going on? Is she really angry at the 8-year-old, or does she want to get mom and dad's attention? Is she angry at mom and dad? So on a purely behavioral level, I would start, I would make that list. And I would let her know in advance, and I would put it in a pretty matter-of-fact way, but so that she knows that you are serious. Here, these are the consequences to those actions, and then you have to do it and be consistent no matter how much that child yells and screams.
I'm wondering if it's competition with the 8-year-old. We only have about 5 minutes, and I've got three really important questions. And one of them just came in. It looks like it's from a youngster. Mm-hmm. My handicapped brother gets all the attention. How can I convince my parents that I need some of their time, too? Isn't that sad?
It is. And it's not uncommon. It's very hard for parents to juggle the attention and all of that when they have a special needs kid. But what I would really recommend for, is this a boy or a girl? Can you tell?
It looks like a girl, Terry.
What I would really recommend for her is to sit down, mom and dad, alone, and to say, hey, mom and dad, I know it must be really hard for you that you have two kids who need your attention, and I know that, you know, little Bobby takes up more energy than I do, but I really need some time and attention from you guys. Yeah, I'm feeling left out, and I'm feeling, you know, whatever it is that she's feeling, I'm feeling like you don't care as much about me, and I really need to spend some time with you. And hopefully her parents will really be able to hear her and be there for her in the way that she needs.
So teach the kids to use their words instead of acting out what they're feeling.
And sometimes parents get so caught up in the stress of managing the day and taking care of a special needs child that they forget that the other child needs them just as much. and sometimes they need to be reminded.
Boy, lots of questions pouring in. We're going to have to...
I can always come back.
Yeah. Okay, two real, these look like hard questions,
okay.
And long ones. Today I had to work. When I came home, there was no laundry done by a 15 and 16-year-old, both girls. It's mostly their clothes. The excuse was there was no hot water. There was hot water when I came home. It was only the two of them. There should have been plenty of hot water. I know they're lying. I don't want to get into an argument about lies. I only want them to clean up after themselves.
Mm-hmm. So, great. Don't do their laundry. If they were expected to do their laundry before you left for work, then they're still expected to do it regardless of whether they did it while you were at work or not, and I wouldn't do their laundry. 15-year-old girls want to be dressed nicely for school. Believe me, if you don't do their laundry and you say it's up to you to do your laundry, eventually they're going to do their laundry. It may not be at the time, at the pace that you want them to do it, but they'll do it because they don't want to look bad at school.
How about boys who just wear whatever's on the floor?
Boys, that's a much tougher one. But I would still do the same thing because, look, a 15-year-old boy may not realize he smells, but eventually his friends are going to be like, man, you smell, and he's not going to get the girls, so eventually he'll do his laundry. It will take longer, most likely, with a boy.
Okay, good advice. Here's a hard one. My teenage daughter was put on birth control for acne. Mm-hmm. Since then, she has been pregnant twice, all before she was 17. The first time she was very young, 14, and she decided to have an abortion. Since then, another pregnancy ended in spontaneous abortion when she took all of the rest of her birth control pills at once.
Mm-hmm.
She knew she was pregnant when she did this. She has since moved out and isn't talking to us. We have younger girls at home and hope to do better. Any insight?
Wow.
Whoa.
I mean, this clearly goes so deep and so far back in the history with this child. I would really wonder, obviously, what's going on that this girl is turning to boys at such a young age and acting out so much and trying to get attention from boys. Did she not get it at home? Did she not feel heard? Did she not feel seen? And I would really encourage this parent to have open conversations with their three daughters who are at home to also make sure that they understand about sex and the birds and the bees and about diseases and HIV and all the unfortunate realities of today. And I think that it's very important that they figure out what went wrong with this 14-year-old, what she did not get in her relationship with them that she acts out so much.
Well, it sounds like a two-parent household. We have younger girls at home.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it's just as tough in two-parent households to have those kind of open conversations. I mean, look, I do think that single parents have certain challenges that double parents don't have, but just because there are two parents there doesn't mean it's all sugar and spice.
There is so much more that I want to talk to you about here, but we only got a few minutes. I'm just going to give you some ideas of what people wrote in because I really want to acknowledge them writing in, and I really appreciate it. One of the things I wanted to ask, and you talk about in your book, is birth order personality.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have time to do it at this moment, but there's a question here about working mothers. I don't need to work but want to. My mother's making me feel guilty. We can is that addressed in your book?
A little bit, but I also really believe that it's important for mothers to have something for themselves, and a lot of the time work is an important part of their identity. I would love to talk about this more. Maybe you could have me back on the show because I would love to address this really
like
in
more depth.
She says,
I don't need to work, but it makes life easier and I'm certainly happier.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just see if these are addressed in your book so people can go out and
sure.
buy your book.
And my book is The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids.
I found it on Amazon.
Oh, good.
Name. It is on sale right now. It's $14.95 regular. It's on sale for $10.17 new copies. So this is a good time to run out and buy this or jump on your internet.
And I think right now if you spend $50 on Amazon, you can get free shipping.
That's great.
So buy five of my books.
Pass them around to your friends or your children.
Yeah.
Another question here from Susan
to how much of behavior problems are emotional, how much are nutritional, allergy-related, and pollen season. I have one kid that gets totally out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another question from Rich. Homeschool versus public school, your thoughts. Here's another question. Discipline versus creativity. I have one child that needs structure. The other one flourishes on unstructured and is very creative. What's the best for this?
I've addressed many of these in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, and I hope you'll have me back on so that I can answer all of them in depth. Maybe you can save them, and then we can start there.
Definitely.
I would love that.
Thank you very much for being on with us.
My
I have
pleasure.
A few announcements that I need to do at the end. You are a delight.
Thank you so much.
Delight.
You are, too.
Let me look at the bottom here because Heather gave me announcements I have to do. One of the helping the kids make decision makers. That one just came in from Sally.
And I have a whole chapter in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, all about helping your children be good decision makers.
Another one, terrible teens. What can you say when they just won't listen? Okay, definitely, definitely we're going to have you back.
I would love it.
Remember to join us tomorrow on BBS Radio, 5:30 Pacific, 8:30 Eastern, for a discussion entitled Where Did the Love Go? This is an ongoing series about relationships that we are doing, which includes a bit of our new project about how body image plays an important part in relationships, and should it play an important part. And remember, a pausing thought, remember that when an event happens, it becomes part of your history. You can't erase it. What's important is how you respond to it and learn from it. If it feels bad, it's just an indicator that you don't want to repeat that experience. Thank all of you for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow, to our Monday night listeners, Vocal Profiling Live, 5:30 Pacific, 8:30. Thank you, Dr. Jen, for being with us.
My pleasure.
We will certainly have Heather reschedule you. This has been one of the heaviest times for email that I can possibly remember. Thank you. We'll talk later.
Thank you.
This music is from an album, Deep Space, by the artist Dependence, Celestial Ocean. Is the cut. And I'm using this music because with my own kids sometimes I felt like I was floating in deep space with no answer. Dr. Jen Berman certainly has brought us some insight. We'll let you know when she comes back to be with us again. Thank you.
Thank you.